DW Africa Link.
As a mother of three children, the number is pretty good, even though some choose to have bigger families. However, young women are choosing to have fewer children these days. Today, we are exploring the why behind this shift. Is it the rising cost of living, career ambitions, or something deeper? Please stick with me as we unravel how modern pressures and personal priorities are reshaping motherhood as we know it. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Young women in Africa are having fewer children due to several factors, including modern lifestyles, improved access to education, healthcare, and contraception. A growing number of women are delaying childbirth to pursue higher education and careers, which is associated with reduced fertility rates. According to a 2023 UN report, the fertility rate across Africa has dropped from an average of 6.6 children per woman in the 1970s to around 4.3 in 2021. Countries like Kenya and Ethiopia have seen notable drops, with fertility rates below 4 children per woman. Despite these declines, Africa's fertility rate remains higher than the global average, but the trend towards smaller families continues. Is this a good thing or not? Let's discuss more on this with Dr. Gift Kawalazila, a health expert and DW's correspondent in Malawi, Miriam Kaliza. But maybe we can start with you, Doctor. Can you just give us some of the factors that are contributing to this influence, to this shift that young women right now are not interested in having more children?
The observation is quite correct, that there are some pockets in Africa where we are seeing reduced fertility rates amongst women, especially the younger generation of women. However, some reports, if you consider the literature from, let's say, the World Bank Technical Paper 125, they indicate that Africa in general hasn't significantly reduced its population. But in terms of the pockets that are actually having a reduced population, there are several countries that have been highlighted as being the special cases. You have countries like Botswana and Zimbabwe. And looking also inside those countries, there are pockets of individuals in terms of socioeconomic stratification that are also exhibiting this kind of trend of reduced fertility rates amongst the women. And some of the causes that have been attributed to this can be grouped as cultural, as well as social, as well as and also the status of women, where in culture have got things like religion, some of the traditions that are also followed by other African societies, and also you can consider urbanization itself, in terms of changes in reproductive behavior. Women are probably now, some of them are actually now becoming working class, and that alters their general behavior, as well as their interests in as far as their lives are concerned. There are also issues to do with uptake of family planning methods. This has got a direct effect where people actually can choose or to delay getting pregnant or having children. But also it can come as a secondary effect, let's say, as a way of actually preventing sexually transmitted infections in terms of HIV and AIDS, for example. So people can actually access, like, for example, condoms simply because they're trying to actually prevent themselves from STIs or HIV. But then secondarily, you find that they're also preventing themselves from unwanted pregnancy, even though that was not the objective for the use of the condoms. Issues that have been highlighted in some reports as to being the causes of these pockets of reduced fertility rate in some parts of Africa, in as far as countries are concerned, but also in as far as certain regions or tribes or groups of individuals or groups of women within countries actually concerned.
Now, Miriam, just to find out from you as our reporter on ground, how have cultural norms around family size and childbearing evolved in recent decades in African societies?
Thank you so much. I think culture plays a vital role in these things. You can see that there's a divide. I give an example of Malawi. In rural areas where maybe access to education and healthcare may be limited, fertility rates tend to remain higher. People are still having many children because maybe children culturally they are deemed wealthy. If you have many children, then you are rich. If you have fewer children, then you're not well-to-do. The divide now is in the urban areas. Modern women are influenced by economic pressures, or they want to educate, to give their children, you know, good education. They want to stand out in society that they're taking care of their children and stuff like that. And so that leads to smaller sizes. Also, I would say the cultural divide is coming in because of women empowerment. You can agree with me that these days more women are more empowered, but especially in urban areas. So they go to school, they pursue their careers, they do this, they do that. They wouldn't want to be having more children because they are going to delay them in doing some of the things that they want to be doing. So indeed, culture has evolved, and there's that divide among rural and urban dwellers.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, with what you just said, Miriam, how then are these women convincing their husbands, in your opinion, that, you know what, two children, that's it? Because even when we read about the families in the history before, it's actually usually from the husband's family that will be giving more pressure that, no, two is not enough, we need more children, or from the husband.
Indeed, this day, that's where the empowerment issue comes in. Sometimes women will go get some contraceptions or contraceptives without the knowledge of the man in the house, and she's going to have two children, and that's it. Maybe the man will just be thinking that my wife can't have any more children. And sometimes, because of the empowerment, we are able to discuss these things. Men would think that having more children, they are preserving the lineage or clan or ethnic identity. But sometimes, maybe because things are changing, these things are global or regional, they are understanding. Or maybe they'll opt to go have children elsewhere, not in their maternal home.
Yeah. Dr. Kawalazira, do you want to add something on that? I'm just wondering where the men stand right now, where the husbands stand, what's their input in all this? Because from what Miriam was saying, women are more empowered, women want to focus more on their careers. So the husbands don't ever say anymore?
Thank you. I have to agree with Miriam on this. I think some of the actually observations from some of the papers actually say that There's also an issue of cost-benefit analysis in as far as having the number of children is concerned. So, for example, if you are a subsistence farming family and you think that there is a higher benefit to having more children and a low cost to raising them, you are bound to actually have more children. If you're looking at these children as a source of labor on your farm or in your garden, and then you're living in a typical village whereby the cost of actually raising these children might not be compared to that that of people that are actually living in same urban or very urban areas, then there's more likelihood actually for you to have more children. So this argument comes to the stand of where men are. Basically, they don't actually need to be taught about this. Men are also following the trend because I think there is also that weighing of cost-benefit analysis. If you're living in an urban setup, probably you're married to an educated woman, and then obviously the cost of actually raising more children would actually be high because of the quality of life that would want your children actually to have. She already talking about good education and so on and so forth. So that alone, if you start to feel that there is a higher cost, okay, of in having more children as compared to the benefits, then you're likely to incline towards having a smaller family. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and let's talk about the access to contraception and reproductive health education. How does it play a role in shaping family planning choices among younger women? And of course, urban is covered, but let's focus more on the rural areas, Doctor.
So in terms of access, if there is good access to these products in terms of family planning and as well as very good health promotion that has actually been done to the communities, then the women actually have got kind of an advantage because there are some discrete family planning methods that they can really take regardless of the stand of their husbands or the stand of their parents or their in-laws and so on and so forth. For example, if you think about the injectable family planning methods, women can actually access that without the knowledge of anybody else within the family or at the village. So that kind of also empowers them to actually make informed decisions in as far as childbearing is concerned, regardless of the stand of their husbands as well as the families.
And how are rising concerns about maternal health and fertility issues affecting the number of children women are choosing to have as well? You are a doctor.
Yes. So the previous thought was that most of the sub-Saharan African countries have got very high infant mortality rates, and that actually was looked at as an incentive for families to have a lot of children, as a way of actually replacing those that actually died, because the chances of the children surviving were very minimal. And this is still the case, especially with families that are in rural setups, because in terms of access to healthcare, more hospitals and other preventive measures like vaccines and good life and hygiene are still very hard to get by. So a lot of actually such kind of deaths in terms of infant mortality as well as child mortality still occur in such kind of deprived societies. The picture is a little bit different in families that are probably have got women that are educated, they are knowledgeable about basic issues like hygiene, the importance of going to the hospital and so on and so forth. They know that the chances of their children actually surviving is quite high, and they would rather focus on the future numbers of children that they have as compared to having a lot of children as backup. In terms of maternal health, it has not really been seen as a deterrent in determining the number of children that women would want to have, especially in the rural setup. They know that pregnancy is a risk, but still anyway they'll still want to actually get pregnant and have children.
And Miriam, you are a woman, also a career woman, a journalist at that. That means traveling around a lot and always busy. Just from your own perspective, how do you think African women can balance traditional family expectations with modern life challenges?
Well, I love the shift as a person, because it shows now that we are moving from a place of not knowing to a place of knowing. So, because also cultures differ, women should be able to balance where they are in society currently and where they're coming from. You do not despise your background, they say, but it shouldn't really delay you or shouldn't be the deciding factor of what you should do or how you live your life with your family. You have to decide what works for you and what doesn't work for you. Also, having in mind where you're coming from. Going by culture, for example, and we want to have a lot of children because we follow the maternal system of our way of living. They would want me to have a lot of children because now those children are my brother's wealth. My brother is the one who's going to take care of these children that I have if anything happens to me. But my brother also has a family to take care of. What's going to happen when he's not able to take care of his family and I'm expecting him to take care of me and my children? So you should also balance, see where you're coming from and where you are right now, and take it all in and make a decision.
Now, Doctor, I heard you mention over and over again about contraceptive, about methods to I mean, methods that women are using to ensure that they have few children. But let's talk about the side effects. I mean, you take these contraceptives over and over again, then maybe at a later stage when you're tired of a career or when you feel like you want to now be a housewife and you just want one more child and then complications come. Can we talk about that?
So basically, we have got these contraceptives in two groups or two categories. They're what you call reversible and non-reversible ones. The reversible ones are where those that you can actually decide to stop and you should be able to get pregnant again if you'd like to get pregnant and bear more children. The non-reversible ones are the ones that you do once and for all and then you cannot get pregnant again. So basically, it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of game. There is a choice that you can make. There are different kind of contraceptions that you can actually take. And they actually have to fit. They've got to be fit for purpose. For how long would you like to actually delay this pregnancy? Is it just for 3 months? Is it just for 6 months? Is it just for 1 year? Is it for 5 years? Is it for 10 years? Is it permanent? Okay? So it all depends on the choices that what one is actually making, depending on the information that is actually available to them and the need that they have to actually take these contraceptives. So as I said, the side effects also depends on the individual as well as the nature of the contraceptives that they're actually taking. If by any chance you are actually experiencing any kind of side effect, go back to the clinic. They can probably better advise you. Probably they can change the modality of the contraceptives. They have got different ways in how they actually operate or work. They don't all work the same way. So if probably your body is actually kind of not comfortable with working with one type of contraceptives, then they can actually change to a different mode of contraception, which actually works a different way up until a point when actually a balance is struck and you're actually comfortable with all these contraceptions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Doctor, for joining us. But Miriam, before we go, what's your choice? How many children are you thinking of having as a career woman?
That's a good one. Maximum is two for me. I can take care of two children.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us here on DW Africa Link Podcast.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. While fertility rates are declining across much of Africa, Nigeria's population is still growing rapidly, and the country is projected to become the third most populous in the world by 2050 with around 375 million people. Now, can Nigeria handle a possible population boom? Joining me to discuss this is Zainab Mukhtar, a communication specialist who previously worked for Planned Parenthood Federation Nigeria, PPFN.
Short answer is no. The way things are going now, Nigeria cannot handle it.
Okay, why do you say so?
There's quite a number of things. So the foremost one is that poverty is increasing. So the number of people just falling below the poverty line is just increasing day by day. Different, policies that come in just make things worse. And we don't see concrete plans. I mean, the government is always trying to do something. So, yeah, there's that. But we don't see any concrete plans that show that between 2024 and 2050, these are the concrete things that will make conditions better, that will pull people out of, the poverty line, that people are going to get jobs, or just things to do that will bring them income, not just, regular jobs. So that poverty is one of the main issues currently in terms of, the country handling additional number of people. If we are having troubles, managing what we have right now, which is over 200 million, then, getting to 500 million or 300 million is going to be just something else. And, yeah. Okay, sure.
But I remember when you were at the PPFN, you were quoted in some articles where you were saying that Families in Nigeria also don't even believe in contraceptives. Do you see that changing now? Because, of course, if you're saying that a boom in population is going to be a problem for Nigeria, so then what is the country or what are the NGOs doing to ensure that at least this should be balanced?
Yeah, so in terms of people taking up contraception, what we are seeing is that, you know, there are more people taking out contraception. But I think the issue, okay, so I think everybody would know by now that we have data issues in Nigeria. So the last NDHS that I have access to is 2018, that's National Demographic and Health Survey. Mm-hmm. And the birth rate, as of the last time, it was about 5.3 average in the country. So with some areas, you know, having over 7, so it just means that women in their lifetime are having 7 children and above in those areas. And then, you know, areas like Lagos down south are having like 3 children. So in terms of, you know, the big numbers, we are not seeing a significant decline in birth. However, like when you look at just people around, people are more aware. People are looking at, okay, like would I have enough money to fund school for my kids? Would we have enough money to eat? Just eat, period. We're not talking about eating some, you know, nice kind of food, just to eat. Yeah, so we are seeing more men also, you know, being more aware of the number of children, because when it comes to family planning, we talk a lot about men involvement, that men are not fully buying the idea, especially around northern Nigeria as well. We are seeing more men being more aware, and
even in the north.
Yes. Okay. So, but the big numbers is the issue.
Yeah.
You know, on the larger scale, we don't have that evidence to tell you that there's a significant difference. But, you know, there are changes. People are more aware. People are looking for options. Not all of them are open to, you know, modern contraceptives, which in my opinion, and, you know, data also says are more effective, really. But at least
they are like traditional ones.
Yes. You know, people are talking about tracking their periods and all of that, which, you know, is good for them. But I tell people, if you are serious about not getting pregnant, please take on contraceptives, because, you know, you are more...
You make mistakes and, you know, things can just change. Your cycle can change anytime, right?
Yes, exactly. And things like ovulation, although we have signs, you know, that would say, okay, I think I'm ovulating after your calculations and other things, but you don't see the egg coming out.
Yeah.
So there's that. Yeah, but people are getting more aware is the point. But in terms of, you know, large scale, we are not seeing any significant difference.
I'm just thinking also, Zainab, I mean, Nigeria has the largest film industry in Nollywood. Wouldn't you think also using some of those movies, some of those films as awareness would also help?
Well, yes, it would. But you tend to see that movies that are tailored towards awareness end up being boring sometimes. There are a few that come to my mind now, like there's one series and it's actually quite interesting, but a lot of them tend to be boring. But what we need with the movie industry, in my humble opinion, is that we need more investment. We need significantly more investment. We need to increase the quality of what comes out of it, you know, even the quality of the people that do the work. A lot of people just do it off the top. We need more trainings for them as well, whether they pay for them themselves, that's a different thing. But we need higher quality in terms of what we do. I mean, you'd hear a lot of people tell you that these people are trying with the resources that they have to come up with what we end up seeing, but there's significantly more to be done in terms of investment in that. And then, so as we increase the quality of that, then we can at the same time, you know, start looking at what are the priorities that we have as a country, as a nation. So look at those key priority areas, and then we can, you know, infuse them into the themes of some of these movies and series that we create, and we should be able to see some results from that as well.
Okay, thank you so much, Zainab Mukhta, for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast. We really appreciate your insightful contribution on this topic. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This, a podcast, was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening, and it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.